Anything? Yeah. Okay. We have a question from our side.
Sadhu, 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 Bhante. Thank you for explaining this sutta and most amazing deep Dhamma that Buddha is teaching us. When you are speaking of greed, hate, and delusion, excuse me. I see here that the five lower fetters include sensual desire and ill will. So those two would be lust. Sensual desire would fall under lust, particularly, and hatred would fall under ill will, particularly. But then there's delusion, which you're speaking of the signs of hate, greed, and delusion. We see these signs that cause sensual desire and the signs that cause our hatred to arise, or that trigger our hatred, let's say. And then it's interesting that you were talking about delusion too, but then I was really curious to hear how you would what are the signs for delusion? Like, what are those things that trigger a delusion? And then another thing is that how does delusion feed ill will? How does delusion feed sensual desire? And like, how does sensual desire feed delusion? You know, I'm really curious about how those interact as together, because I get the feeling that they're all connected or almost maybe the same thing. Could you speak about
Yeah. They are all well connected. So basically, delusion is a kind of a pervaded defilement. It's everywhere. Now, when you can't have lust without delusion, because you have to objectify the she's a woman. She's a beautiful girl. So that I am a person. I am a man, and she's a woman. So that very, very identification is due to delusion. So you distinct and you make a person, you become someone and you become a man, and and that object becomes she, and she's a beautiful woman. So that very objectification happens due to our own delusion, avijja. So that fabrication happens due to delusion, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana. So that continuation happened. The very root cause is the avijja, the not knowing. That so basically we are living in a society, so that individuation is very much highlighted. So you are an individual, I am an individual. Say, I have my own identity, I have my own passport, I have my own name and nationality and blah blah blah, and you also have this and that, and I'm a man and she's a woman. So likewise, that diversification, that kind of a distinction is well established in the society. So the moment I see a woman, so I recognize her as a woman. So then the latent tendencies are operating within the mind. Oh, she's a beautiful woman. I better ask her name. I better ask her address and whatever it is.
So it's a
So,
sort of confusion about what is like that I am something different than you, or so.
Yeah, that not only that. So immediately when a sign appears in the mind, so immediately we attach a label to it. Immediately we attach a person to it. We can't simply look at it as a sign. Say, when I'm looking at something through the eye, so what is immediately arising in the retina is simply a sign. But I didn't figure it out. What I do is, this is a beautiful cup, or this is a beautiful clock.
If we start to perceive it.
Perceive it from the object point of view. We make it kind of a subjective experience. So I have my own gathered information. I have my gathered all prejudices and all different kinds of perceptions. So to this particular sign, I attach all these things very quickly, and that is how I recognize it.
Would you say that that is delusion?
Definitely.
That's like a de definition of delusion.
No, not I can't say it's definition.
I'm
So
wondering, what is it?
that's the thing. So that's why, I mean, it's very difficult to detach delusion from anything. So the delusion is everywhere. Delusion is pervading the whole experience.
Okay.
So either you recognize a person and you get angry, that is also due to delusion. When you recognize a person and you become lustful, that is also, there's a delusion involved. So now how about assume, now you are developing vipassana and you thoroughly do a proper analysis, proper investigation. And again, you get a thorough understanding, okay, there is no person here. There is no being here. Everything is very much like interacting, and these are mere processes, elements, characteristics, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So likewise, so you slowly, slowly disintegrate this whole process. Now you can't recognize a person within you. You can't recognize an individual within you, a man within you. And you recognize, okay, the man is a convention. A woman is a convention.
Yes.
A girl is a convention. A boy is a convention. And now you are slowly, you know, sort of unentangle the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
You are recognizing where you have went wrong. You keep convention as convention. You are not taking convention as something true, something, say, hard or something concrete. You simply say, okay, this is a mere convention.
Yes.
Other than the convention, there is nothing substantial there.
Yes.
So that is a very, you know, very kind of a thorough understanding. Now say, if I am telling this clock.
Yes.
So this clock consists of many things. It has a battery. It has some circuit, it has some representation, it has some plastic, and all things are assembled together.
Okay.
Now I call it as a clock, an alarm clock, a Seiko alarm clock. Now I am adding a brand name even to that.
Yeah.
So now all that complications, all that fabrications, if I am able to recognize how this clock being created, how these all fabrications are properly, you know, assimilated, properly aligned, assembled, and then I give a name as Seiko alarm clock.
Yes.
So there, now I have a kind of an understanding. Okay, there is no real clock available here. It's a kind of assembly of so many little parts. There is no substantial clock available here. So if I have that thorough understanding within me,
yeah,
I can still look at the time.
Okay.
But I may not so much attach to it, I may not so much grasp it, because I know there is nothing called a clock, it is a mere name.
Yeah.
The clock is basically an assembly of so many little instruments, little parts. So likewise, so when we are able to penetrate that compactness,
yeah,
available, so that is very important insight.
Yes.
So all vipassana process is actually attacking that delusion. So that's why, so the delusion is available for everywhere, available for each and every defilement. You can't have any defilement without delusion. So the overcoming delusion is also a tedious process, a long process that we are continuing with our vipassana, and that is responsible slowly to attack at various levels, various hinges where the delusion is operating. Maybe the compactness. As a result of compactness view, we immediately attribute a person to it, an object to it. Mm-hmm. And when we see something continuously, so we think, oh, it exists. That's also due to delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say, for example, this light. And you know, this is not a continuous light. It's always blinking. That blinking we can't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
It's arising and passing away. On and off, we can't recognize. Our eye is not capable of, it's not that sensitive to recognize that. But it's a continuous process is going on.
Yeah.
So likewise, so more you thoroughly understand through vipassana the whole process, so the delusion become less and less, avijja become less and less, ignorance become less and less. As a result of that, the fabrication become less and less. Avijja, paccaya, sankhara, now you do the opposite. That when the absence of avijja, when the ignorance is not available, so the mind become calm, mind become relaxed, mind stop doing fabrications. As a result of that, that whole process now slowly, slowly stopped. So your mind is peaceful. even though you look at something, I just got it as something.
Yes.
Now you are not fabricating. So mind stopped fabrication. Now the same girl. Conventionally, you probably recognize, okay, she's a girl. But you don't need to think too much about her because there is no real her there.
Yeah.
Just maybe you can, if there is lust available, you can do a kind of a little vipassana and disintegrate the whole thing. And later you may be able to look at her, but no defilements, no thoughts even in the mind. Because mind prefers to be alone, mind prefers to be dispassionate, and mind prefers to be sort of released rather than getting involved. So likewise, the vipassana process is helping us to overcome this whole delusion. So to answer your question, so I can't give a simple answer, okay, this is the only cause causing delusion. There are many causes.
Yeah.
And Buddha mentioned the delusion is the not knowing of the Four Noble Truths.
Yes. I just was remembering that when you're speaking. Okay. That completely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Bhante. Are there any more questions on your side, Bhante?
Anything? No, not from our side.
Okay. Then I'd like to invite Renuka to ask the next question.
Actually, I got some answer to your earlier answer from your early answer, but time is thinking, you know, in the delusion sense, I was thinking if we don't know, oh, this is my anger, or this is my attachment. That is a delusion too, isn't it, Bhante? Once we understand this is my attachment, this is my anger, then that delusion goes away, isn't it, Bhante? That is what I felt. So I don't know.
Yeah, that is, I mean, right? To some extent, you are correct. So basically, recognizing attachment as attachment, delusion as delusion, or say anger as anger. So that is one important aspect. So you are able to look at it objectively. It is not my anger. It is mere anger. It is not my lust. It is mere lust. So you do that separation. So it's a kind of a causal result. A reason in the mind due to certain causes, and you are able to look at it. Okay, this is this. But you need to correct that it is not my anger. It is not my lust, but it is just anger. It is just lust. And you are able to do that separation. At that moment, you are not further feeding it, encouraging it. So as a result of that, there's a higher possibility you are able to overcome that.
But another thing, actually, in that case, it means delusion is really connected to avijja, isn't it, Bhante?
Definitely.
Okay. So, and one more thing. Now, if we are really having this thoughtless thoughts, it means there's no value in the thought. Is it a delusion, Bhante?
No, that's the thing. We can't say that we are completely enlightened even there, because the potential, the latent tendencies are still available. So that's why that's the Buddha's main point he highlights. So even though currently there are no active defilements in the mind, that doesn't guarantee in the future that I am completely free from that particular defilement. Still, the potential could be available due to various reasons. Again, the same defilement can arise. So that's why we have to be quite vigilant in our practice, continue our practice till complete uprooting of defilements happen. That's why the practice becomes a bit difficult. Otherwise, I mean, if you suppose that you are able to develop certain concentration, as a result of that, all the defilements are not existing right now.
Okay.
So temporarily, you are liberated, but not permanently. Again, the next moment when the necessary amount of concentration is not available, or necessary amount of wisdom is not available, again mind go and grasp. Again, you get deluded.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you.
So that's why
much.
I mean, ultimate in the, from the ultimate sense. So Buddha mentioned Nibbana as ragakkhayo, dosakkhayo, mohakkhayo. So when you are to thoroughly or 100% attain Nibbana, so that means complete uprooting of raga, dosa, moha. So till that time to time, even a noble person might end up with various entangled with various fetters.
Yeah, Bhante, in that case, actually, how are we to, you know, identify that it is really getting reducing means you less and less involved with these defilements? Mm. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that
that's a very interesting question. Yeah, that is through our own observation of our own mind. Say, for example, previously, say about 6 months ago, if you consider your mind, how many frequent lustful thoughts arise in your mind? How many frequent hateful thoughts arouse in your mind? How much too much thinking happens in your mind? You have a little bit of an assessment about it. And today, what is the amount of that? Are you feeling kind of a reduction in it? Are you feeling kind of a calmness in your mind comparatively with just before 6 months ago with respect to that time and today? What is the difference? Are you feeling any kind of a reduction of lust, hatred, delusion? So then we can say, okay, there's a little reduction. Yes. Okay, and there's a calming down. My mind is a little peaceful now. Less burning. Not too much talking. Not too much inner chatter. So likewise, it's a very, you know, relatively that we need to look at. As a result of the practice, is there a little reduction happen in the mind? So from the day yesterday to today, there may not be difficult to recognize that kind of a reduction. But when we are considering a considerable period of time, there may be a little reduction one can recognize. Then there's a slow fading off happens.
Yeah. Okay. Bhante, I have one more question. Before my practice starts, you know, the mind is like, I thought when I compare that time and now, it's like a hard the stone. Now it has become like a sponge. It means things go through that. Things doesn't hold on to that, you know. It's water is falling onto the sponge and it goes through like kind. Mm-hmm. So when somebody is very sad situation, also I feel it shouldn't be sad, you know. And I don't, not like those days, if somebody is died or something, then I would say, or my deepest sympathies, but I don't feel like saying that word now. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I feel it's useless word, you know. Deepest sympathies, or me, that person attain Nibbana, is useless, you know, to say that. So if I don't say, also people would think, oh, this person is so, you know, arrogant or something like that. I can, you know, people can think like that, you know, but I'm not worried about that. But, you know, it's like that. Even when the happiness comes in, those days I would say, oh, congratulations and blah, 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 and go on praising that person. But now I don't feel like praising that person too, because then I will feel that whether I am so arrogant again, so I cannot be happy with that person's happiness. But I, in my heart of heart, I feel that there's nothing to be happy, you know. So will that be a problem in living in society?
No. Actually, basically, it is not a problem. Basically, this is how the practice evolves. So our amplitude of that oscillation become less and less. Now, typically, our mind oscillates. So when something good happens, so our mind oscillates to a very higher level and we get elated. And when something bad happens, then it goes to the other side, to the negative side, and again we become completely collapsed. That is how we were operating. But as a result of the practice, that oscillation become less and less. That amplitude become less and less. So you are very much associating the bottom, the middle line. So you are becoming more and more steady, less oscillations. So you are simply maintaining that less oscillation and kind of a comfort zone. It is not kind of an insensitivity.
Okay.
You are quite sensitive, but the mind's, how to say, shock absorbers, reduce that shock.
Yeah, sometimes I feel that have I conditioned my mind to this kind of situation, or I feel that, you know, or am I made it conditioned my mind to be that not sensitiveness, you know?
No, on the other hand, you can see is mind is conditioned or whether the mind is more deconditioned. Previously, mind was so much conditioned. I am so and so. I should be like this. I should be like that. I should cry. I should laugh. I should elate. I should get elated. I should react. Now, all these shoulds are there. Shouldn'ts are there. Now you, as a result of the practice, you become more natural. So as much as possible, your mind become more natural, more into this normal, natural, original state, that conditioning has become less and less. As a result of that, you can cope up with any situation because you understand through the practice, okay, there is nothing substantial here, nothing to take so serious about it. Everything is transient, everything is changing. You can't have permanent happiness. And there is no person, an individual in the ultimate sense. So likewise, that those understandings, those insights are really giving us a thorough establishment, thorough understanding, deeper stability to the mind, so that the typical ups and downs of the life, not taking too much stance, not taking too much penetrative influence to the mind. Mind has thoroughly understood some deeper insights.
Thank you, Bhante. It's really good to discuss these things. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Right, thank you. I'd like to invite Yasala for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante, for the Dhamma talk today. Actually, in the Dhamma talk, you mentioned like to see the thought coming in, so that the seeing itself will some kind of, you know, discourage. I actually thinking of like sharing example, Bhante, like I these days I actually had some, I would say, lustful thoughts coming in, but then somehow, yes, as you mentioned, I could see that. So I see that there's a lustful thought coming, and as you mentioned, I did not do any further on that. So yeah, I saw that and somehow it stopped there. And then, so it happened not only once, few times, especially like when I become free, when I'm not busy physically, I can see these thoughts coming. And I was just looking at it. But the thing is that it keeps coming. But I feel like me being lucky in that sense that I can notice it now, I think that's because of the practice. So, Bhante, I think this is how it, this is also, I think, kind of a stage, right? So I keep on doing the practice more and more, and that might help me for eventually to even, I think, yeah, maybe even not to have this lustful thought one day, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can agree with you. Basically, when we are fairly aware of the mind, So we can recognize lustful thoughts. Previously, actually, we were unable to do that. Instead, what happened was we become slaves to lustful thoughts. Immediately, we start reacting according to it and we get deluded by them and we start doing various this and that because we become a victim of the lustful thought. But now we are able to trace them. We are able to notice them. So, okay, they are lustful thoughts. They are still available. They are still coming. But I am not promoting it. I am not encouraging them, but they are still coming. So that's all right, as far as we can say, because in one sense, what we can understand is the tendency is still available in the mind, the lustful tendency, the raga anusaya is still available. So that is why a little bit of grabbing of those little signs are still happening. Yes. Because the tendency is available. Assume that someday, one day, that if that is completely eradicated, uprooted, then these lustful thoughts may completely disappear because the root is not available. The essence is not available. The necessary causes are not available. And it will simply very much, those type of thoughts may not arise in the mind. So that's why Buddha sometimes mentioned to evaluate our practice, to see the fading away of lust by recognizing how many lustful thoughts are arising, what is their whether they are intense or whether they are reducing. Because as a result of the practice, it has to fade away slowly, by the way. I mean, we can't say that immediately lust will disappear. It may not happen, but slowly it will fade away.
Yes, but because previously in a similar thought, I mean, there should definitely a following action would have happened, and at least it's not happening now. So, yes.
Correct. Yeah, that's why, you can see that it's a kind of a tedious process because there's a significant tendency in the mind to promote it even because it has some sort of a delight, particularly in the lustful thought. So we have to restrain ourselves. We have to have certain amount of dedication to the practice. We have to have a kind of a very good restrainment in the mind. Okay, I should not promote this. I need to let it go. This time I am not, whenever a lustful thought is arising, okay, I'm not going to play with it. I'm not allowing it to completely overwhelm the mind. I simply let it go. So that's a very good restrainment that we need to maintain, a good wisdom we have to maintain.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you for the advice.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Kumudini for the next question.
Dear one, Sarnai Bhante. I have a small question and also to add something to what that other lady was talking about, how she does not feel, either sorrow or joy or what, she doesn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. I am experiencing a similar thing, but I just still go ahead and say what is necessary to observe the norms of society. I also have that same thing when somebody, I don't feel this great big sorrow and great big joy. But I just still go ahead and say those. Is that all right? I'm not lying, but it's sort of like a expectation, like saying hello to somebody or something like that. That's okay, right?
I also think it is not that we want to cheat another person, but we are simply respecting the tradition maintaining an unfriction path.
Yes.
Simply greeting another person, say hello or something like that. But still, we need to maintain the mind's calmness, peacefulness without disturbing it.
Right. One other thing is, Malte, I do observe my mind quite a lot, especially when I'm sitting in Paryanka meditation and all that. I observe my mind, but during day-to-day stuff also, I catch myself many times, but there are situations when I feel that if I get too close to the situation, I it is upsetting for me and I just don't get there. So what should I be doing at situations like that? Like, for instance, there is a certain individual that I dislike being around. So what do I do with them? I know that I'm feeling like that, but I'm not the only one who feels that way. There are others too, but there's also Buddha says, Asevana cha balana. So how do I handle this, Bhante?
I think two things. So basically, so when we are not yet confident about our own practice, so we have to be quite careful, because this association, as you said, can have an influence towards my practice. So assume that he's not a good person and he's promoting something bad. And as a result of this association, I also become a bad person. I also become sort of tempted to do what he is doing. So that sort of thing can happen. So that's why Buddha was cautious about it. He asked, okay, you need to avoid them. Avoid those bad people. So that is something we need to accept. We need to adhere to. On the other hand, another level is where you are developed to a fair level. So you yourself is quite established in your practice. So you are now thorough, you are now strong, and you can establish yourself every time as much as possible within your good stance. In that sense, the other person can't have much influence on you.
Mm-hmm.
That is also mentioned. So there are, you become kind of a stronger person. The other person is very much, even though he's a bad person, he can't have a significant influence in you because you are well established. So that is another level.
Yeah. Bhante, I will never be influenced by that individual to become like him. It's just that being in the presence itself is upsetting me.
Mm-mm.
Because he's... How do I control those thoughts in me? So I just avoid it. Is it okay?
That's the easiest thing to avoid.
That is okay, right? It is also, I'm feeling it is some kind of patiga.
Don't say it's a patiga. It's a kind of a strategy, we can say. Say there's a person that they assume that there are two shops available. In one shop, that you are properly greeted and you are being treated properly and you are sort of giving the necessary things properly. And there's another shop, they are not greeting you well, they are hating you and they are blaming you and all things. So you avoid that one. So you go to this shop, the good shop.
So then you acknowledge that the strategy that I am employing is okay.
Okay, no problem. Okay. But the thing is, there may be situations we can't avoid.
Yes.
Because now when we have a selection, yes, I can select what is suitable, what is kind of helpful to me, useful to me. But there may be other situations that I have no say, I have no selection, I have to bear it. So at that time, I have to be cautious not to get influenced by the other person's wrong, unwholesome activities to maintain my wholesomeness intact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Bhante. Another thing, a little question. I was listening to one of your Sinhala Dhamma talks and you were mentioning in order to keep your mind from, you know, getting attracted by all kinds of things that are prevalent in the world. You know, best is not to get in, you know. You were also talking about watching TV and YouTube. I do watch a lot of YouTube, otherwise I cannot follow the Dhamma. You're talking about other things, right?
Yeah. Because people are not only looking at YouTube to learn Dhamma, no?
There are
many things available in the YouTube. So they get distracted, they get addicted to that. They spend a lot of time in watching YouTube, maybe films and this and that. So that is what I was pointing out.
Thank you, Bhante. We appreciate your teachings. Much merit to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bhante, there's actually a written question. It says,
right.
One should feel mudita when another person is successful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Nice and simple answer, huh? All right, thank you.
So that's the quality of mudita. Yes, that is the quality of mudita. So typically what happens is, when another person is successful, there's a tendency in our mind to be jealous, envious. But the quality, the good quality to have is the mudita, where when we see someone is successful, to appreciate that, to encourage that, and to be happy about his own success. So that is something Buddha appreciated, Buddha recognized, and asked us to develop instead of jealousy or envy. So we have to have the mudita.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. And then I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Jennifer. Just touching on that mudita, Bhante, that is also something that those two ladies said, that they don't feel happiness when somebody is happy. But that thought crossed me, because the Buddha encouraged us to have mudita, so it's okay to feel joy in other people's success or happiness or whatever, without attachment. So that should be okay, isn't it, Bhante?
Yes, yes, yes. So actually, I was pointing out that typically we take these things too much, and we laugh, we clap, and we drink, and all these things that people do, that typical celebrations. So that is not. That may completely usually fade away, and you become little happy about it. You become appreciating about that his thought may happen honestly, that you are shown. It may happen honestly, and you are happy about it. You have the mudita about it, but you are not going to throw a party to that or something like that. That may be stopped now.
The other point I was going to clarify with you was that the abhijja and the delusion, ignorance and delusion, are they similar? Or I mean, the delusion part sort of overlaps with the abhijja. So you answered that first question by saying that the Buddha said delusion was the not understanding the Four Noble Truths, and no, abhijja
I think the abhijja is where Buddha mentioned not knowing of the Four Noble Truths. That is how typically it is mentioned. Delusion, the moha, is also where, say, we are attributing a self where there is no self, and we are attributing permanence where there is no permanence. So likewise, that's why, I mean, these things are fairly interrelated as far as I can see.
Yes, because you can use the same word for similar situations. Would that be right?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Because delusion also is a kind of not knowing, no? And avijja also is not realizing. Is that right, Bhante?
Correct. Yes.
So, but for clarification, you say delusion is not knowing the anicca, dukkha, anatta. Would that be right if I said?
Yeah, we can say like that. Yes, that's why, I mean, it is not single thing. There's many things are there. So one can say, okay, delusion is where you can't understand anicca dukkha anatta. Delusion is where you can't understand the paticchasamuppada. So likewise, at many levels, we can define, okay, this is also delusion, this is also delusion, this is also delusion. So that is why in the vipassana, we are introducing many vipassana knowledges, many levels of understandings to cut off that different levels of delusion.
Yes, and avijja is more associating a self, right?
Yeah, that is one important thing, that is we recognize our situation as a self, as a person, as an individual. So that is happening because of the avijja. So as a result of the practice, when we are able to penetrate that, once we understand non-self, that significantly reduces delusion.
Delusion now or ignorance or both?
So that's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, there may be subtle differences there, but I would say they are interrelated.
Yeah, yeah. Because avijja pacha sankara, sankara pacha vinyana, vinyana pacha nama rupa. So if you lose that avijja, then you lose the sense of self, isn't it?
Correct, definitely, definitely.
But yeah, sometimes I used to think, well, you can't quite define those two clearly. I mean, they are one and the same sometimes. Sometimes they overlap. Would you agree with me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Difficult to have a clear mark for what is exactly delusion, how it is different from avijja.
Avijja,
yes. Because as far as I can say that how we are sort of differentiated.
I need to that's fine.
Certain places, there may be someone might have recognized it. I need to find it out. But from the practice point of view, they are quite interrelated.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's what I wanted, a clarification. But I think that as you say, they are intertwined and overlap, and sometimes they are one and the same, I think. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, that's
exactly.
Fine. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Because Buddha hasn't quite defined the two independently. Would that be right if I said that?
I also can say, that's why I want to check in. As far as I can remember, I didn't come across any particular sutta where Buddha separately defined these two. What is moha and what is avijja? What is the difference between these two? I can't remember such sutta where Buddha is differentiating these two.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, if you do, we would like you to mention it, Bhante, in the sutta teaching.
See.
Yes.
See such sutta or such information is available somewhere.
Yeah, okay, right. Thank you, Bhante. It's just for completeness sake, I think. And It's nice to know. Thank you.
Correct. Yes, yes.
Can I ask a follow-up to this is something I think I was thinking earlier when I asked that, is that in meditation, there's neutral feeling, there's pleasurable feeling, and there's non-pleasurable feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neutral feeling is delusion. It's related to delusion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would that add to this sort of question?
No, thing is, with respect to neutral feeling, what is the counterpart of the neutral feeling is the delusion. I mean, and that is also not delusion. That is also mentioned avijja.
Okay.
Yeah, in the Chula Vedala Sutta. So when it is asked, what is the counterpart? Patibhaga of Upekkha. So this venerable mention, it is the avijja.
That's ignorance. It's so they're interacting neutral feeling.
No, thing is, they are actually when neutral feeling is available, you don't know about it. You don't notice it. So that is why it is promoting some sort of an avijja.
Okay.
That is why where is
seems like that would be a key aspect of how we get becoming ignorant. It's this neutrality. Of,
yeah, thing is, now when you go through kind of happiness, you could easily notice it.
Yeah.
When you go through some suffering, pain, you could easily notice it. But when you are going through some neutral feelings, you're quickly ignorant about it, and you don't have much about it, and you don't notice it, you feel bored about it.
Okay.
So there's a significant influence, therefore coming towards avijja, because you don't know what is it. And here the question, adukkama sukhaya paniya vedanaya king pati bhagoti. Now this is the question. When you consider the neutral feeling, what is the counterpart of it? Adukkama sukhaya ko avaso visaka vedanaya avijja pati bhagoti. So this Venerable Dhammadinna answering to this neutral feeling, the counterpart is the avijja, the not knowing part. So therefore, I feel they are quite interrelated. Avijja and moha are quite interrelated. Maybe synonyms.
Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that they are
synonyms. Same. Yeah. 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 That's the thing.
Just it's in English, two different words.
Yeah.
Used
yeah.
for the same.
Correct. Now, say for example, now when we call tanha. Many terms are there for tanha. We call it lobha, we call it lust, we call it raga, and tanha, kamaraga. So many terms are there. But some same qualities also there, but there's a little subtle nuances are also there. So maybe avijja and moha, that's what I need to see whether such little differences are there. I can't remember. I need to find it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Buddha is the self-attachment in
avijja. Avijja, self-attachment. Many things are there, not only self-attachment. That's why not knowing Four Noble Truths is significantly mentioned at many places as avijja. And say not knowing impermanence, not knowing unsatisfactoriness or non-self, that is also part of avijja. So likewise, think they are fairly interrelated.
Incorrect understand.
Incorrect understand. That's also there. So sometimes it is mentioned avijja is of two forms that you don't know. That is one type. The other side is you know, but it is wrong. Incorrect understand. That even though you think that you know, if your understanding is wrong, it's a wrong view. That is also avijja. So likewise, it is good that we are talking about them, we differentiate about it, it's really good for our understanding, but it's a kind of a deep subject, and there are moha and avijja, as far as I can see, fairly similar kind of synonyms, but we need to see in the canon whether there is a particular place Buddha highlighted. I can't remember, by the way. Go ahead, please.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to invite Sam for the next question. Sam, are you able to unmute? Okay, maybe we can come back to Sam. Kumudini seems to have a question as well.
Yeah, can I? Okay, sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, since it is late, I will make it quick. While I was listening to the discussion, I did a search on Sutta Central just for my understanding on Silabbata Paramasa, because I had a great difficulty in understanding that, because the general translation is attachment to rites and rituals. I found that Bhikkhu Bodhi doesn't really agree with that. He says the proper translation is the distorted grasping of rules and vows. I think he's highlighting the word distorted grasping as opposed to grasping. A subtle difference between the two as I can see it. In other words, like inappropriate grasping or something like that. Because one can say, if you're taking precepts, continuously thinking that you are going to get to the goal, that's not going to happen, obviously. So that can be construed as Silabbata Parama. So is that correct to say that way?
Yeah, I think. Because basically, if we think that totally by observing this particular precept, it will take me to the ultimate happiness, or take me to the complete understanding, it will take me to the complete liberation. So that is taking it too far. I mean, it alone can't do it.
Right. Thank you, Bhante. So then I also want to share with everyone something that I found. It says that the third fetter is very well explained in a sutta. I'm sure you know about this. It's called Kukkuravatika Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 57. Now, I haven't read it, so I have no idea what that is about. So I'm going to take a look at it. So, Majjhima Nikaya 57. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay.
Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai.
Okay, thank you. And sorry, Kumudini, you may now unmute.
Vante, I have a small comment, nothing like a question. But I was just wanted to further comment on, you know, Chitra Devi was saying about feeling joy for other people's accomplishments. That is not what I'm referring to when I'm saying that I don't feel elated and down. You know, the two extremes I don't feel. It is, I think she has got that little misunderstand. I feel she has misunderstood what we are feeling. So I just wanted to make that comment one thing.
Don't worry, we understood. Don't worry.
Thank you. Thank you, Pante. Devan Saranai.
Devan Saranai.
All right, Pante, I believe that's all of the question on my side. Unless you have any more on your side, then we're all set.
Okay, I think that's all for today then. We have spent almost 1.5 hours. So it's a good discussion, active participation. And with this, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. So we share these merits with all the beings who are in need of merits. We share these merits with all the past relatives, and we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition, Nibbana. So we will recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambhe deva anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambhe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambhe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.